Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope. I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and I'm joined today by Niall Sargent, investigative reporter with Noteworthy.ie and the Journal.ie, and also Breed McKeown from the Migrants' Rights Centre of Ireland and the Crossing Borders Project. Niall and Breed, thanks a million for joining us today on Reboot.
Thanks for having us on.
I'm really looking forward to having this conversation. It's something that really needs highlighting, the whole issue of migrant workers, their treatment in this country, and what can be done. But first, I'm going to go to Tony. Tony, you have some news about...
I just want to put a shout out for him. You were supposed to do this podcast today with Martin McMahon from the Echo Chamber, because Martin has obviously driven for decades on employee and employers' rights. That is where he bases his expertise. That is where his activism has really lay, but it's just he hasn't been well, and I do want to say acknowledge the fact that the guy hasn't been well, but he's been tirelessly still working on other things, projects, as much as he can, but he's not up to doing a podcast, and we do appreciate the work that he does, and I speak for a lot of people when I say we hope you're better and we hope we see you in 2021. And that's basically, I say awful things about him, as everybody knows. I am very mean to him, but we're still fond of him nonetheless.
No, we are, absolutely. And it was, that's it exactly. Martin was going to be here today. He's great experience on the whole area of bogus self-employment, on the whole area of employment rights, and it would have been fantastic to have him. So Martin, we wish you well. Despite what Tony says, we genuinely wish you well, okay? So listen, we'll see you in the new year. And in terms of the shout out as well, of course, to patrons, please support us. We're independent media putting out this content. We need you to support us. Go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack and please sign up for whatever you can every month to keep us going. Niall Sargent, I'll go to you first. In terms of this piece of, I suppose, extensive research that you did, and in investigation, and they, just for people if they want to look it up, it's on noteworthy.ie and it's called Growing Pains, Fears for Migrant Workers Who Carry the Load of Ireland's Horticulture Boom. And Noteworthy is doing some brilliant work at the moment, and you know, really, you know, commend you for doing this work and highlighting it, because it's not, I'm sure, you know, straight up that media would be looking to do stories on, you know, of this level of in-depth, you know, investigation and with issues and mistreatment of migrants. So I think it's really commendable and brave, and you know, I really commend the work, and of course the work of MRCI as well, we will come on to, which I'm a huge fan of, and again I think needs huge support. But maybe, Niall, you could set out kind of maybe the background of what brought you to doing this piece, and then maybe explain some of the kind of key things that you found out of it.
Yeah, no problem, Rory. So I think this one, the way we work, I think you're aware, but in case the audience isn't, the way Noteworthy works is that we're crowdfunded. The ideas are crowdsourced, and then we're crowdfunded as well to carry out investigations. So the public will send us in ideas. We'll do a bit of research to see, you know, is there a potential investigation there? Put a proposal live on our website if we think it's a valid exercise to carry out. And then we look to crowdfund it from there. So this one would have come around after Keelings had flown in workers from Bulgaria at the start of COVID. And that obviously attracted a lot of media attention. And we had a lot of people writing into us to say, you know, you should look into this. How are workers coming in? I mean, all that proved to be above board. That was okay. But we thought, okay, why don't we maybe expand this out wider and look at, you know, general labour issues in the horticultural, in particular, the commercial horticultural sector in Ireland. Because I don't think people are generally that aware. Horticulture is less than 1% of the entire agricultural land use in Ireland. And within that, it's predominantly commercial, larger scale. So we decided we'd have a look in that. Obviously, looking back historically, there's been issues previously in the mushroom industry. So we thought maybe we could look there again and broaden it out as well to soft fruits, because those are the two biggest horticultural sectors.
But so you're saying it's only 1% of agriculture, but it does have a significant number of workers in it.
Significant number of workers, because it's very labour-intensive work. Obviously, you have, you know, harvesting seasons for fruit and vegetables during the summer that requires, it's a lot of hard manual labour. Mushrooms is almost year-round now, because, you know, the traditional idea of people in the fields picking mushrooms or out in the fields picking strawberries, a lot of that's gone. A lot of it's, you know, it's indoors. Mushrooms in particular is almost exclusively grown indoors, very labor intensive. And another part, I suppose, which we looked at is most people aren't necessarily aware that it relies very heavily on migrant labour, fruit and vegetable in particular, on seasonal labour. So in terms of the investigation itself, we did a three-part investigation in the end. It was, you know, we were looking at one part and we expanded it a bit further because we were able to get some additional funding through this project, this grant from Europe. It's the IJ4EU. Cross-border investigative journalism grant that allowed us to work with journalists from the Balkan Investigative Reporting Network to broaden it a bit further, because we know a lot of workers are coming into Ireland now from the likes of Romania and Bulgaria. So working with them, the main part of the investigation we looked at the mushroom sectors and soft fruit. So we spoke with a few mushroom workers. We also spoke with researchers, such as Breeder, the guest here on this cross-border project in the north. So the response that came back, they had spoken with about 50 workers as well. What came back in terms of labor conditions, we're hearing about, you know, long working hours, low pay, problems with supervisors, poor relationships with supervisors, fear of speaking out from the workers, a lack of access to unions as well, they were finding. So this was what came back in the cross-border area. It was quite, in one sense, it was a bit difficult to get access to workers with COVID, but so we also wanted to look a bit further. We looked at, you know, inspections, investigations from state agencies. Mm. We got data out from the Workplace Relations Committee that showed it had uncovered around €185,000 in unpaid wages in the horticulture sector since 2017, you know, affecting about 3,000 employees. And there was also information we got from Chagas, the agri research body. They did a survey in 2018, which showed actually that it's wider issues, that there's the horticulture sector is facing, you know, difficulties getting staff, due in part because of the low wages, the poor working conditions, lack of suitable accommodation, those sort of issues. So that was the key part we looked at, was the actual conditions for the workers. But then working with our colleagues through the Balkan Investigative Reporting Network, we also wanted to see the impact back home in the countries in the Balkans and other Eastern European countries the workers are coming from. Particularly, we looked at Bulgaria and Romania. And, you know, we wanted to see that if there's a negative impact back home, but also a positive. So in terms of what workers, the money, while it's not as obviously, the wages are generally minimum wage. It's a very, you're working very long hours. A lot of money is going back to these countries and making up a large amount of income for families back home. So there is some positive correlation definitely there. But we also saw that then there's a lot of shortages in agricultural workers back home in those countries as well, where they're facing their own labor shortages because the workers are coming to this part of the world, to Western Europe. The final part we looked at, which is the third party investigation, we're trying to look a bit to the future. So there is obviously right now the predominant labor force, it's still workers from other EU countries. So you're looking at the Eastern European countries within the European Union. There's a big push now within horticulture to relax rules for visas for non-EU workers to come and work for Ireland on a seasonal or longer term basis. There's already a pilot project, a pilot permit scheme in place for 500 workers in horticulture, most of which have gone to the mushroom sector. There are a lot of concerns there from labor, from migrant rights groups we spoke to, with unions we spoke to, but also in a lot of documents we got through Freedom of Information. There's concern from some government departments about allowing this system, because that would be a fairly dramatic change in our visa process here in Ireland, because the way it currently works is visas are generally for more highly skilled, highly paid jobs, whereas this would obviously be a push for jobs that do take a level of skill, but it's very, very much manual labor, but very much for low pay in a seasonal basis. So there's definitely concerns on that industry push we wanted to highlight, because from the main investigation, like I said, we saw there are concerns in the working conditions, particularly in mushrooms and soft fruit, the two areas we looked at. So I guess the question is, before you expand on the horticultural sector, which is within government plans to very much ramp up production in horticulture, before that expansion comes, before we start giving out, you know, visas for workers to come from outside of the EU, should we resolve the current issues in place first before doing that? And from the documents coming back from government agencies, there doesn't appear to be a lot of thought process put into looking at labor rights issues. It's mostly about shortages of workers. But there doesn't seem to be very much in way of should we be increasing wages here or looking to make sure conditions are better for workers.
And is the state, to a certain extent, turning a blind eye or not enforcing legislation, or doesn't have the legislation in place to enforce to allow these conditions continue?
So I think it's a bit of a mixed bag from different government departments. I think the Department of Agriculture, from the records we've seen, the internal records, are very much, I think, focused on growing the industry. One thing that came out was the Department of Enterprise and also the Department of Social Protection were a bit concerned on this push for the visa system, this pilot visa scheme for 500 workers, because they would be getting paid more, you know, above the minimum wage that most of the workers are on at the moment. Those departments were trying, I guess, to see, you know, this is a direction we should be moving in, to be giving workers in the horticultural sector more income. Whereas I think what was coming from the Department of Agriculture was more concerned that those on the visas will be getting paid more than the current workers and trying to equalize it downwards. So it seems like there's a bit of a mix in terms of the departments. You obviously have the Workplace Relations Commission who would be doing inspections. You would have the Health and Safety Authority as well. Some of the feedback we got from experts and academics speaking to is their concern that some of the inspections would be known about in advance. Now, the agencies do say that, you know, there's a mixture of inspections that would be known ahead of time, but also random inspections are carried out as well. So there is a level of work going on. I think the biggest issue in terms of understanding or knowing if there are issues there, which we definitely felt in the investigation, is the fear of workers to really speak out. It's a fear combined with, obviously, levels of English aren't necessarily very good for workers. Experts have told us, you know, to an extent that works in favor of the employers, that workers' levels of English aren't fantastic, because it's obviously then more difficult to move around into other areas of work. But that, for me, was the biggest issue in terms of fully understanding. And I think maybe for state department or government agencies or departments, that might be an issue for them in understanding the level. I think that's why the work of the Crossing Borders project was very important for the research for us, because they've obviously spoken with over 50 mushroom workers over the last few years. We obviously spoke with some ourselves, but definitely one thing that really came out was that fear of speaking up, because they, you know, it's a fear of losing position, because, like I said, the income for their families back home, you know, while the wages for us here, you could say they should definitely be higher for the level of work and the amount of hours put in, it still is very important for their families back home. So there is definitely a fear of speaking out, that if they were known to be talking out, would they get work maybe in a different farm elsewhere? There's a fear there. Would they have to go back to their home country? So that's probably one of the biggest roadblocks that would be difficult to overcome. But like I said, I still think there's room there for the likes of the Department of Agriculture from the research we put in, for example, for the FoodWise 2025, which is the current 10-year food strategy for Ireland to grow the industry. We looked through the minutes of their high-level committee over the last 2 years. There's been no discussion about labour rights in horticulture or any issues that have been emerging, which you would say is quite surprising given the history of some of the stuff that came out about the mushroom industry in the 2000s. So yeah, and they confirmed to us that it hasn't been a part of the discussion maybe for the future, but you know, it's just a little concerning that didn't form part of the strategy to grow a sector. Surely you would want to examine the rights of the workers within that sector.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good point in terms of the idea of, you know, you would think that you would be looking at, you know, the quality of their conditions and the treatment and on a basic, you know, rights level and labor rights level. And we do have labor laws in this country. Thanks, Niall, for that. And I'll come back to you, you know, on the wider issues as well in terms of, you know, what legislation you think might need changing. But also the whole, I think something that struck me as well reading it was thinking about COVID as well and what are the implications and how have these workers been affected. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that. But first, I'm going to go to Breed McKeown from the Migrants Rights Centre of Ireland. And hi, how are you, Breed? MRCI have done, you know, a huge amount of work and continue to do a huge amount of work supporting and empowering migrants in terms of their rights, and particularly around the low paid and insecure sectors. Breed, maybe you could outline in terms of your own experience and, you know, of this particular sector and the issues affecting workers.
Yeah, sure. So just to kind of explain, you know, if people don't know, MRCI, the Migrant Rights Centre, Ireland is a national organisation working for justice, for empowerment, for equality for migrants and their families in Ireland. And in 2018, we embarked on a cross-border project called Crossing Borders, Breaking Boundaries. And through that, and through partnership with the Irish Congress of Trade Unions and Ulster University, and Community Intercultural Programme in Northern Ireland, we've been able to talk to over 1,000 workers, most of whom are from the agri-food sector. And in terms of the mushroom sector, particularly in the border region specifically, you know, I would agree with a lot of things that Niall has said about the long hours, you know, the tough conditions, the kind of day-to-day bullying and discrimination, the lack of knowledge around what your rights are, the language barriers that exist and how employers take advantage of that. And I think it's a kind of sector where there's not a huge amount of really extreme, you know, extreme, what was extreme exploitation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's not a huge amount of extreme exploitation, but there's this kind of border, like just above the law, just right there where you're keeping people employed and you're making money off their work, but essentially they're not accessing their rights. And there's a really complex picture as to kind of why they're not accessing their rights, but they're not, you know, kind of experiencing modern slavery, or they're not, you know, that when people think of exploitation, they might think of that extreme view, but actually a lot of exploitation is that day to day taking advantage of people, making sure that people don't know when their next day off is going to be, when they're going to get home to, like, you know, to pick up their kids. They're going to be working maybe 50 hours and get paid 35 hours of that. And that's what's written on, you know, on the paperwork, but that's not actually what's happening in real life. Or they're kind of promised certain working conditions and then their salary is a lot lower. You know, so I think that kind of really comes down to, and I think the core thing from our project and from the agri-food sector in general and how Ireland treats migrant workers is a generally just not valuing them as humans, as people, contributing to the country, contributing to society, putting food on all of our tables.
And in terms of that, do you think we don't value them? And why do you think that is?
You know, it is complicated. I think that, you know, you asked a question to Niall there before around, you know, is the government turning a blind eye? Is the, you know, is the kind of what's going on there? And I think to some extent, the mushroom sector and where it sits in agri-food as an entire sector is that it is a valuable sector to the Irish economy, and it is complicated. There's different responsibility in different government departments, and that often means that people can kind of shirk responsibility around it as well. And there's not a cohesive plan of kind of how you approach this. And the experience that mushroom workers face, you know, to some extent isn't actually different to what, you know, maybe workers on work permits in the meat sector face, or seasonal workers in free picking. You know what, I think if I'm honest, I think it comes down to racism and discrimination, you know, and people, a shift, you know, in the past maybe 10 to 20 years of jobs being done by Irish people and then outsourcing that to people from other countries who are here for opportunity, are here to better their lives, are here to provide for their families. And I think that employers, not all employers, but a lot, like, there are structural problems in the sector that enable employers to take advantage of that. So if you take the example of language and what Niall was saying around supervisors, so often what employers will do is they will divide people by language so that you're on a line, say, with people who speak the same language as you. And then the supervisor is the person who might be from a different place or, you know, might have a better level of English. And what the employer does is they kind of divide and conquer, because they turn workers against each other. And yeah. then the people are annoyed at the supervisor, but actually the employer is setting the working conditions in the factory. And then because you're working maybe 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. 6 days a week, you don't actually have the opportunity to learn English, to go to like local classes, to make friends with your neighbors, because you don't have money to spend on those things. You don't have time outside work to kind of engage in society. So, you know, that is a huge barrier. And then if you also think about the fact that people don't know their employment rights, like if I moved to another country today, it would take me a long time to know, okay, what's the equivalent of the Workplace Rights Commission? What's the equivalent of this? You know, what are contracts supposed to look like in this country? How much time am I allowed off in law? Mm. And I think that, do you know what, Niall, what you were saying there about work permits, and, you know, and like, should we be giving out work permits if employment conditions are so poor? But essentially, from MRCI's perspective, we want to encourage legal routes of migration. You know, of course we do. But, you know, there are questions that need to be asked as to, you're like, as to how long we're going to let employers make money off the backs of migrant workers who are coming here, you know, on hope for their futures.
And is there a question here about, and Niall raised it, the whole, you know, the fear that workers have and the, you know, the lack of access, for example, you know, the wider issue that we lack, you know, collective bargaining structures, for example, in this country, the trade unions, there's not a structural way in which trade unions can support workers, can access workers in these situations.
Yeah, that is really difficult for the trade, you know, for the trade union movement here. And that might be very different to how workers as well have experienced trade unions in their own countries. People might not have been a member of a trade union before. They might, you know, not necessarily know how that works here, how the structure of that works here. And then the unions are kind of weakened because there are no collective bargaining. There is no collective bargaining mechanism. And we're seeing that, you know, affect lots of different sectors. And it does... You know, MRCI would definitely call for collective bargaining measures to be implemented. I'm not sure if we'd be heard on that or if that would change anytime soon. But really, I think that fear. Yeah.
No, sorry, because I think it is a really important point in terms of understanding the workers' vulnerability.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of the elements, because I think the other issue around, you know, the trade union movement is as well that movement making space for migrant workers and really enabling access to the mechanisms and the spaces within trade unions. So there's the kind of there's the collective bargaining issue, and then there's the need for trade unions to understand how structures can be racist and discriminatory and how people can address that in their own organizations, and then do, you know, outreach that's going to meet kind of their, you know, their target audience's needs. But then also there's that whole divide and conquering thing that employers do, is that really workers don't speak to each other about their conditions because they're afraid of being reported on, or you know, they're afraid of being the troublemaker. And like, say in the mushroom sector, you know, if you're given a line of button mushrooms, like that is your worst day, because you're picking all these small mushrooms. It's going to take hours for you to get the punnet weight. But if you're given the kind of bigger, flatter mushrooms, you're going to make more money on that day. And that's like one way that a supervisor and employer can discriminate against you. And we've had, you know, kind of those kind of day-to-day, like essentially bullying that people face, right through to, you know, sexual harassment and discrimination around pregnancy and everything. You know, it's a largely female workforce as well.
Yeah. Thanks, Breed. Niall, you wanted to come in around that.
Yeah, just in terms of, I guess, the idea of how workers, you know, can become aware of their rights or trade union access. Another issue in there is this, obviously, the seasonality of the horticulture, in particular for soft fruits and vegetables. So you're getting workers coming during the harvesting season for a few months and then going home, which is, you know, a factor in unions getting access. But also you have cycles in terms of the nationalities. So, you know, we would have obviously in the early 2000s, say, you would have a lot of Polish and Baltic nationalities coming in, and they would have worked a lot in mushrooms and fruit as well. if you look at the labor court cases and workplace relations commission cases over the years, there was an increase. You would see mostly Polish and from Baltic states would be the nationality of the workers taking those cases. Speaking to labor rights or employment law experts, you know, it takes a while to build up those relationships to get cases taken. And then that cycle changes, whereas now you're having a lot more Bulgarian workers, to some extent Romanian and Hungarian. So you're having to start that whole cycle again, because, you know, maybe there's different levels of English, there's different relationships, like Breda was saying, maybe with unions in their home countries, or can be different levels of trust of unions, for example. Different levels of the language of English in the country. So you're building, you have to start that whole process of building up again to get workers to understand or know their rights. So that is one part of the whole seasonal aspect as well, that makes it, I think, extra difficult for workers to understand their rights. And look, you obviously, that's the nature of the job, but you could argue that works in the favor, obviously, of the employer, because it's on such a cyclical or seasonal basis. It's different, obviously, in mushrooms now, which has become almost a year round. So you're not so much looking at seasonal, whereas, you know, a migrant labor force that is to an extent established here. Like, we've spoke to one worker in the mushroom area who's been working on both sides of the borders over the last 7 or 8 years at multiple farms. And this is the issue as well. Like, while a lot of these workers are raising concerns, they're also faced into a situation where, even after that many years, because of their working in their own language or a common language such as Russian for, you know, potentially up to 12 hours a day, as some workers were telling us, they don't really have the time or capacity to learn English. Even if English is offered by the farms, it's often in the evening, and you can argue, would you have any brain power left after working those long shifts to learn a new language? So all that keeps these workers in that. If you're in the same industry for 7, 8, that's the only industry he sees himself being able to work in, because of the language barriers and because of the skills he has developed while he's here. So that's another sort of blocking factor for these workers to learn their rights to move outside of it, because, you know, there's a cyclical nature and they don't have the time to do this.
Yeah, could I also come in there? Because I think there's also something about the internalization of racism and discrimination, because, you know, like, what we hear workers say is that they have such a low level of confidence around speaking out. They're told every day, you know, all day, every day, that they're rubbish in lots of different ways. And I think that when you get that day in, day out, I think it's, you don't really believe that you can change anything. And you see, you know, so many other people going through the same poor working conditions. There's this kind of acceptance that this is your lot and you have to get through it. And actually, speaking out isn't going to change anything. And then there's just the lack of confidence around speaking out. And I think that is also a barrier for accessing the trade union movement as well, because I think you do have to be proactive to make the most, you know, out of a trade union membership to be an active member. There's something else I was going to say. That's totally lost on myself.
I think that's a really important point, that whole concept and idea of the internalizing of the racism and the internalizing of the, you know, to a certain extent, dehumanizing, you know, of people, and that they just accept. And on the other side, then, that highlights the importance of being, you know, informed about your rights and been empowered, and people working with you to support you and say, actually, no, that's not right, you know, and that you have rights. And as, you know, one of the wealthiest countries in the world and one of, you know, supposedly, you know, a great republican democracy, you know, surely we should be enabling, you know, and supporting and empowering people who are living and working and providing our food to have a standard of living that we would expect and we would think people should have.
Absolutely. And I think as well, people don't speak out because there's that whole good immigrant narrative.
Yeah.
You know, that you have to come here. Just that there's this feeling that you don't want to be one of the bad ones. You don't want to be seen as being lazy or not hardworking or creating trouble, or, you know, you're here and you abide by the laws and you know, you learn how to speak English and, you know, you can't be a complex human self.
Yeah,
you have to be like this perfect idea of an immigrant, otherwise you'll be seen as like not worthy of being here. You know, which I think is a huge burden, really, to bear. And I do think there is public will to change the conditions. for workers. Like, I think there was a public reaction to Niall's work and another work that MRCI has done in the mushroom sector, you know, in the 2000s or more recently. And people don't want to see those conditions in this country. People are ashamed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And do you think, Niall, and maybe then you can respond, just in terms of what I raised earlier about the COVID, the implications of COVID, you know, we've seen it in the meat factories that, you know, these poor working conditions, you know, the lack of accommodation or people being accommodated, you know, in overcrowded situations of workers that, you know, COVID then obviously they're more vulnerable, they're more at risk, but also then that puts, you know, society wider at risk. And that how have you seen that kind of play out, or have you kind of?
Yeah, I don't want to disappoint you, but it's one aspect we didn't really get too much into in our in any way. For us, it was more a hindrance in terms of our capacity to travel and to go speak with workers directly in person. Like, we would have done everything predominantly over Zoom, all the work and the interviews with experts as well. So that kind of blocked us. I mean, the feedback we got from the experts was that it maybe wasn't as big an issue to the extent, or at least that's the feedback they were getting, maybe to the meat packing factories and other than the meat processing, which obviously came quite to the fore. I mean, there was one publicized case a few months ago of a mushroom farm, I think in County Tipperary, that did have an outbreak. There was some issues raised by a few of the workers we spoke to, but I mean, I can't go into it because we weren't able to confirm what they were saying. So can only go on what they told us in a few instances. I guess in general, these would be, you know, issue. There would be a lot of workers within the facilities. You know, the companies that we spoke to came back and said that they have protocols in place. I mean, I could say about for Keelings, I think it's come out that they've had actually quite a stringent process in place around COVID for workers, even where workers are, you know, obviously getting accommodated in the likes of student accommodation. They're in family units is what they're calling them. And we got some records from the HSA, you know, and the HSE that showed that they were satisfied with the processes in place. I think probably in the broader sphere, COVID combined with Brexit is very worrying in terms of the profitability for the sector, which in terms of what we're looking at in labour rights is it'll make it more difficult in the long term, I think, to increase wages for workers and change the situation for them, because the mushroom industry is very much export dominated. It's 80% abroad to the UK. So we're seeing all the issues around COVID combined with Brexit this week alone from the UK. So there's big, big issues there. And like I said, with very much, I know Bree touched on this, very much a focus from the Department of Agriculture and I think the wider government in general, the focus on the profitability and labour shortages in the sector rather than the conditions for the workers. I think that's going to remain to be the predominant focus going forward for them.
Yeah. And Breed, what's been your kind of experience of that in terms of COVID?
Well, specifically for the mushroom sector, thankfully it hasn't been as hard hit, you know, as the meat sector. You know, they're like, we would work with a lot of kind of small farms, and they would be used to wearing masks and gloves. I'm not sure exactly, you know, why it hasn't hit kind of in the same way. Like, but, you know, it has been an opportunity, I guess, to talk about working conditions and to share worker stories, which has been a real, you know, it's been a real bonus. I think in terms of housing and stuff, I would agree with Niall. It's not, we don't necessarily focus on housing too much. Housing is an important part of MRCI's work, but when you improve wages, when you improve employment conditions, you automatically end up improving housing. I guess, you know, in the context of Ireland's housing crisis, that might not always be the case, but definitely we would see a real big range of housing situations. So people living with families, people living by themselves, people living with other workers, you know, so it is a kind of real mixed picture. And I think sometimes when the media, you know, would approach me about housing during COVID, I feel like it kind of, it plays into blaming people, you know, whenever they're getting COVID in their workplace, you know, it really plays into kind of blaming workers, although they're living in overcrowded accommodation, you know, and it's actually like, well, one, why is that the case? And two, like people are still convinced they got COVID at work. Yeah. So it's definitely been a very intensive time for people in the agri-food sector. The other thing I'd say about COVID is that you know, agri-food was considered an essential service at the beginning yeah. of lockdown, yeah. but there wasn't really, you know, there wasn't a risk assessment as to were these industries set up to protect workers from COVID? Are they safe working? Have they been safe working environments for people? Mm. You know, and that's something, again, it comes back to whose lives are valued. You know, what's valued more, the profit and the production of the product, you know, or the workers' working conditions in their lives? But yeah, I would agree with everything else that I said about COVID, really.
No, I think that's really, you know, an important point to make. Again, like, and it's across the board in, you know, essential workers. And we know migrants have been, you know, absolutely key essential workers in the health service, you know, in retail, across the board. And yes, you know, there's this I suppose, you know, juxtaposition between, you know, being called essential worker and then still been left on, you know, in crap conditions and minimum wage. And as you say, you know, dehumanizing conditions. So there's a real need, I think, to challenge the system and say, you know, well, if people are being called essential workers, they need to be treated with dignity. Niall, you want to come in there?
Yeah, sorry. One thing I didn't touch on in terms of COVID, which really, I think, was highlighted, is that there's little enthusiasm from Irish people to take up these jobs. Obviously, COVID, while agricultural workers and seasonal workers were seen as frontline workers, there, from the data we've seen, there was definitely a big impact on the movement of workers from the likes of Bulgaria, Romania, the Baltic countries over for the seasonal work. So much so that the government had this Help to Harvest scheme, they call it, which was trying to get workers on the live, people on the live register to go and work in horticulture to essentially save the harvest during the summer. Yeah. Because there are already big shortages, like I said, in the sector that was exacerbated. And this definitely has an impact on the profit of the sector if you're not able to harvest your fruit and vegetables. I think at the time in the summer, there wasn't a huge uptake for this scheme, despite, I have to say, from the documents I've seen, a very big effort from Chagas and different government departments to make this work. There wasn't a huge uptake. A lot of what was put out in the media at the time was about transport issues, that, you know, there was difficulty, obviously, which is true for people to access these farms in remote areas, especially maybe if you're on the live register. If you're living in Dublin, you mightn't have a vehicle, it's more difficult. COVID restrictions, can you arrange a bus transportation, etc.? But also from some of the documents we've seen, we got through Fianna Information, it was very clear knowledge within the government departments that Irish people aren't really interested in this work because it's difficult manual labour, they're long hours, and it's low pay. So, I mean, it's very well understood and reflected that probably these are the much bigger blockages for Irish people to take up the jobs. And then again, that relays the question of, if we know that this is a reason why Irish people are not taking it up, should we be instead looking to improve that situation rather than relying on migrant labour every year to resolve those shortages? Should there be a push and support for industry to increase wages, have more regular working hours where possible? Obviously, sometimes you have to work longer for the harvest at different times. But maybe that's the direction that the government should be looking at its policy to try to improve those situations.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Niall. I think it's something definitely that needs focus. Maybe just to finish up then, Breed, in terms of broadly, you know, I think, like, I saw actually a tweet from MRCI, which I thought was really, really nice, just coming up to Christmas, and we're in that kind of Christmas New Year period. And it is a time when people reflect on home, and of course, migrants in particular, you know, that travel often, you know, would have traveled back home for a period or might have had family come here. And of course, there's very, very little of that going to happen this year. But on a broader sense, you know, making that point of, you know, people who are, you know, migrants are, you know, they're all of us, you know, there are, you know, care workers, there are families, you know, they are just as human and as, you know, deserving of dignity as every one of us. And I thought, I was quite struck by it. How do you see, maybe just to finish up, you know, broadly, what needs to happen in Ireland to kind of make us a more supportive, welcoming country? And broadly, do you think that, you know, the migrant experience could become, you know, one that's much more positive than it currently is?
Yeah, I mean, I think to connect to what Niall was saying earlier about sustainability of the agri-food sector, I think that migrant worker representatives need to be in decision-making spaces around future food strategies, around the government's approach. You know, there's a food ombudsman without real, you know, without real capacity or resource to to focus on working conditions. There's the Food Strategy 2025. There's also a 2030 food strategy, and you need to think about sustainability, not just in terms of moving away from intensive farming, but also thinking about workers' rights as a part of that. So I think that's really core. And then the second thing I would say is to really reform the work permit system, because currently work permits are, you as a migrant worker, you are tied to your employer, and it's you can change employer technically, but the amount of knowledge, time, emphasis to do that is really insurmountable, and you can't even do that until after a year you've been with that employer, a whole year. So if people are really unhappy at work, they're trapped, you know, they're trapped in these workplaces. So we need mobility for work permit holders, for seasonal workers, that really that really meets their needs as workers, but also meets the sectors that they're coming into. Like we're supportive of seasonal work. That works for so many people, to have a season in another country to work and then to go, you know, to go home back to their families. And I think for Ireland, you know, we really need to think, like, we need to look back at our history of emigration. You know, people move for love, they move for work, they move for opportunity, they always have done, and they always will, and Ireland knows that extremely well, you know. So we really need to appreciate that history and our story, and think about, you know, how we want to treat others coming into this country.
Yeah. Breed McKeown from the Migrant Rights Centre of Ireland and Niall Sargent from Noteworthy.ie, thank you so much for joining us in Reboot Republic today. It was great to have you. And as always, we remind listeners, please become a patron, support us, go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, sign up whatever you can, a fiver, 10 or 20 euro if you're feeling really generous and you have lots of money, 100 euro a month would be great. And listen, we're around the Christmas period, so I hope everyone has as peaceful and restful time as you can, and restrict your movements and be good and don't spread this bloody virus, and we'll all get into 2021 and have a much better year. So we'll talk to you all soon. Thank you.